Hey, it's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man here, and I'm swinging by the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Jesse Rass here, and you've made the great escape into comics by jumping inside the pull bag today.
You've just jumped inside the pull bag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, and Image to IDW, Boom Studios, and Zenoscope, we have everything right here. We cover things like Transformers, He-Man, superheroes, TMNT, and Radiant Black. Yeah, we have all that and so much more. It's all inside the pull bag here on the Geekcast Radio Network. So, without further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we're reading right now, here inside the pull bag.
All right, folks, J.J. Abrams, Henry Abrams, exploding chips in heads, everything else. I am TFG1 Mike. This is the Geekcast Radio Network. You have jumped inside the pull bag. This is episode 563, and JT and I are back with Spider-Man Bloodline, the five-issue series that was written by director to the stars J.J. Abrams, his son Henry. And I don't remember what who the artists were off the top of my head because we recorded this months ago. But that's what this episode is, and this is probably going to be the penultimate episode of 2024 for the pullbag, unless I change things around, because I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, I will give you a full rundown of what's going to happen inside the pullbag in the intro to episode 564. In the meantime, JJ and Henry Abrams, Marvel Comics, Spider-Man, Bloodline, coming up next here inside the pull bag, only on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the pull bag. This is episode 563. We are on the journey to 600 episodes, which will hit in January 2025. Yes, that's right, folks. We will be ending the year for the pull bag in December on episode 599. And oh boy, do I have a plan for episode 580 to 599. You'll hear about that in a future episode. But for now, I am, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me is JT from Saskatoon. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
That's good. That's good. And we are thwipping through the Marvel Comics universe. And we are going to be talking about another Spider-Man title this week. One I found which was overall much more enjoyable than going to hell and playing with the devil, because they've done that before a million times.
Yeah, except Dark Web made it fun and enjoyable to read and not at all suck like One More Day.
One Last Day is what that should have been called.
You're not nearly as funny as you think you are, Mike.
Sure I am. I know I am. I'm hilarious. I am, because I read most of my comics digitally. Apparently, in the last 12 years of the pull bag, I have forgotten that there are actual back covers to comics. Like, I've known that there are back covers to comics, but reading them digitally, I usually stop when the last page says the end or to be continued or whatever. I never go back and, I mean, I look through the cover art, but I never, like, go all the way to the final page and see the back cover. And I did this time, and I find it very, very interesting. So I want to read this, and this is kind of synopsizing the book, but we'll go through it anyway like we always do. J.J. Abrams and his son Henry and superstar artist Sarah Pichelli spin a Spidey story unlike any other.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, like, when I first heard that, you know, Mr. Lens Flare was going to write a comic. And, I mean, there have been celebrities over the years that have stepped in and, you know, written comics. I mean, Patton Oswalt's done a whole bunch. Kevin Smith, you know, Mark Hamill did this one called The Black Pearl from, I believe, Dark Horse back in the 90s, which really, that was like the first one that kind of made me say, it's like, actors can write, you know? And yeah, and the cool thing about this story is it's about Peter and his son Ben in this alternate universe, written by J.J. Abrams and his son Henry. And I mean, just when you think about Spider-Man, I thought that was a really cool thing. Then you, it's this real father and son endeavor in both aspects, both in the creative and the creators.
Yeah.
And it's Spider-Man and having kids is something that they've dabbled into varying degrees of success over the years. I mean, originally it was, it's during that, what some say a very creatively bankrupt period in the 90s known as the Clone Saga, which I am a fan of. I'm not saying it's all good. It's just, I enjoyed the story and what they were trying to do. And then it ran on for like, 5-6 years, and was only supposed to be like a year and a half max. But during that period, Mary Jane was pregnant, and this is 616 Marvel. So the OG Mary Jane is pregnant. We meet Ben Reilly. Peter's spider powers kind of go out on him. So him and MJ leave New York. He's left it in the best hands that he could. And along the way, she has her kid. And then they're told that their little daughter, who was going to be named May, was stillborn. And they didn't have a May in the comics at this point because Aunt May had died. And
right.
The only person that stays dead in comic books is Uncle Ben, because even Jason Todd and Bucky Barnes came back.
And so the Waynes. The Waynes usually stay dead.
For and Thomas and least, Martha Wayne.
Yeah.
So they say we're stillborn, but then there was this nurse that was in the operating room that leaves the hospital, and she's got this baby-sized bundle in her arms, and she goes to this boat, and she's met by these guys called Scryers, which are these 6-foot-tall, chalk-white-skinned and black cloak dudes who are... It was some cult that Norman Osborn created or took over when he was hiding out in Europe for all the years that we thought he was dead. And it's assumed that Peter, that was their kid, and the goblin was going to do something with her. And then they said the bundle wasn't a shot, wasn't the baby. It was this MacGuffin that they used in a later storyline that where Peter had come back and basically was supposed to give Norman a 1-in-4 chance of getting like all this power, and it got made his madness even insane. Like, it was dumb. But then we get Spider-Girl, May Parker, who originally showed up in one of the last issues of the second volume of What If, number 105, titled Legacy in Black and White. And it's written by Tom DeFalco, drawn by Ron Fiennes. And it was literally like, she's born, she's got these powers. I'm pretty sure it's just she could be seen as immune because obviously she was born with the powers, but she doesn't have the X gene. It's a whole thing. And she went on to have a very long running series. It gave rise to the MC2 comics universe for a short time in the late 90s. And yeah, I mean, currently there is the new Ultimate Spider-Man comic, which is set in a world where the maker, who is Earth 1610, Reed Richards, who went insane and became a bad guy, traveled to this alternate universe, prevented certain people from becoming heroes, and basically created his own world. And in that universe, Peter does not have powers when we first meet him in the story. He's been married with Mary Jane. He's a reporter. He's got a couple of kids, And it's a great series so far. So you come to this, back to this thing after me rambling like that. The reason I brought up media like that, just to give the listeners some background, is in the MC2 universe, Peter lost a leg and became a forensic scientist for the NYPD. And in this story, as we'll get into it, is he's a reporter. And he's missing his right hand, so he's got the requisite hook hand. And
okay, I need to say something really quickly here. It took me almost to the end of the book to realize that he had a hook for a right hand. I don't know how I missed. Yeah, it took me until I saw him when they freed him from being upside down in the 5th issue. We'll get to that part,
yeah.
But literally. Didn't even notice it whatsoever. I don't know how I didn't, but I didn't.
Yeah. And I'm going to say right now, I enjoyed the story.
Mm-hmm.
We said that you were talking this off mic before mm-hmm. we started recording. Mike has said, you know, he liked this story. You know, it's a bit of a spoiler. He likes this story more than Dark Web, folks. I respectfully disagree. I'm not saying that the story's bad. It's just I enjoy Dark Web more.
Okay. You know. So here's, and I'll go ahead and spoil this, and I'll tell you why. Dark Web is cool and nice and fun with me, and I love that it's Peter and Felicia at the end. But
yay!
Anybody else other than what's his nuts? With it, you could put Dr. Doom with MJ and have them have kids. I would like it more than whatever the hell that dude's name was. Dude that we don't
Paul,
like.
We don't Paul, like Paul.
Yeah, we don't like Paul. That's right. Paul sucks.
We don't like Paul.
So take that, okay? Like I said, positive. I love Peter and Felicia together, Spidey and Black Cat together forever, all that good stuff, whatever. My disappointment in that, as I just said, is Mary Jane goes back to Paul. Ugh. Whereas in this, I literally broke down crying. And we'll get to that point. And I'm going to try not to cry on air, but literally the ending of this and how this turns out was more emotionally satisfying to me than MJ getting to go back to Paul. That's my only negative. That's my only negative on Dark Web, for the most part, I think. You can go back to episode 562, folks, from last week, and you can hear if I have any other negatives. But that's my overall why I like Bloodline more than Dark Web. Better ending.
Cool.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Like, hello?
I mean, this, the you know, as we kind of, just to backtrack a little bit in Spider History, as we get into the story, you know, it's Spider or Peter has gone through this hellacious battle with this villain called Cadaverous.
Yep.
And, unfortunately, Mary Jane gets shanked, and I love his minions here. They look like cyborg xenomorphs.
So that's the other thing about this. Even though it's what's her name? Let me go back and look at the credits
here. Sarah Pacelli.
Yeah, even though it's Sarah Pacelli, it's obviously JJ and Henry giving her ideas of what they use, alien type models. There's something else in here that I recognize from a different film that we'll get to at some point, but I was like, yeah, those are xenomorphs.
Yeah.
Those are, I see what you're doing. Well, I
mean, they're definitely inspired by xenomorphs. Like, you'd be a fool and a communist to say otherwise. And
absolutely.
This is the second off-brand xenomorph that's been in Marvel Comics, the first being the Brood, which, mm-hmm. if they were not inspired by the xenomorphs, I'll eat my hat. You know? But Mary Jane dies, and it's Mary Jane's died before and in better. Okay.
Yes, but I don't know. I understand.
Oh, sorry. I remember what I was going with that. Like, she's died, finger quotes. I meant to say in comics, because there was a couple of years, 2 or 3 years in the late 90s, early 2000s, where Mary Jane had a stalker because she went back to being a supermodel.
Right.
And this is pre 9/11. Right. She was on a flight, like a 747, that mm-hmm. this guy who's got some weird, I vaguely defined superpowers, he blows it up, and like he's kidnapped Mary Jane, and then he blows up the plane, and Peter and everyone in the Spider-Man universe think she's dead until she's like found, and hooray, Mary Jane's still alive. They still love each other. The marriage is still intact. Not for long.
Hey, now.
Not if Joe Quesada has anything to say about it.
Stupid quesadilla. Worst quesadilla ever. Hey, I want my money back.
No. Okay, one thing. One, yes? I hate that Joe Quesada is the basis for Spider-Man can't be married, Spider-Man needs tragedy, blah blah blah. Look, he can be a little bit happy, people. He doesn't have to be completely ecstatic.
He's not Angel. Like, you know, he doesn't, you know, one moment of happiness isn't going to turn him evil, you know, people. Come on, let's go.
You don't know that. I mean, if Peter got everything that he wanted and at best he turns into an asshole, but that happened in the House of M, and we don't talk about the House of M.
Or he starts dancing in a black suit.
You can think, when I say Cassata, you can think Joe Quesadilla, but it just really annoys me when people use a food that I love to describe some asshole.
Well, sorry, that's my point. There are good quesadillas, there are tasty quesadillas, there are great quesadillas out there that are made very, very well. This guy and his opinions of how the story should be made, bad quesadilla.
He's not a quesadilla.
Yes, he is.
You insult one of the best food on God green earth by calling him so we're moving on. So, yeah, Mary Jane gets backstabbed by these Freddy Cougar-like fingers and thrown off the God. Like, Peter cannot catch a break. This is the second woman in his life that's gone off the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yup.
And then, you know, we flash forward to the funeral. Yep. You know, he's lost his right arm. Ben's, I think, like
10, maybe.
Oh, no, because it says 12 years later. So he's at best 3 years old, three or four.
He looks too big. No, he looks too big to be three or four.
He's in high school when we get to the main thrust of the story.
Right. So okay.
He's at maybe five. So I'm going to say four or five.
I'll agree with like four, five, or six. Anything between four and seven is fine.
Yeah. And then Peter's got this dead look in his face, and we go 12 years later. You know, got to love a time jump.
But I like this because this does, like, okay. So me and time, I've talked about this before on the show. Me and time jumps don't work so well.
Depends on how they're executed.
That's my point. It depends on how they're executed and how this is done, where it's just a black page with the white letters of titles for Batman Beyond Return of the Joker. You have this opening scene of Batman kicking the Joker's ass, the gang kicking their ass and flying through the city and whatever else. And then you have this nice soft white flashing titles of the name of the film, and then we get the music and the swelling and the whatever. It's a peaceful kind of transition. It's not jarring to me, whereas some time jump transitions are so jarring to me. But this works. I like this. Yes, 12 years later, and we are in Ben's apartment or house or wherever.
Well, it turns out he's living with his elderly Aunt May because... Yes. You know, that's just how it is. I mean, he's this skinny little rail thin ginger taking after his mom. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good guy. He packs his homework, takes out the garbage, makes breakfast for Aunt May, goes to school. We get discount Flash Thompson bullying this kid.
I like that it's not Flash.
But
I know, but I'm saying, yes, it's bullying like Flash Thompson would do. It's bullying like what happened in Spider-Man 2002. I agree, absolutely 100%. I just like that they didn't name him fucking Flash, because I like Flash when he actually matures as a character. Yeah. I don't need bully Flash all the time, but yes, we have the bullying.
Okay, so we got Crash Thompson here, and he's bullying this kid, and Roland.
Yeah, Roland.
Well, the bully is named Roland, not the bullied kid, and he tells him to stay alone, and then this guy just, everything that happens to him in the next 30 seconds, he earned this, he deserves this, suck it, you loser. He asks Ben, how's his mom doing? And boom, he gets boot fucked through a door.
Yep.
And then the principal, the world doesn't need your kind of help. This pissed me off so much right here. Like, I was bullied a lot as a kid. Okay. I got beat up more than once in high school. Like, four guys followed me off the school bus this one day and slapped me around and were shoving snow down my pants in the middle of winter. You know, I didn't go to my first two classes because I was just like traumatized hiding in a bathroom. And when I went to some teacher, asked me, where was I? I told him what happened. And there was this very much this apathy like this.
Yeah.
You know.
So the principal calls. Go ahead.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So the principal, they call Peter, and Peter's late. So he says, sorry, I'm late. Thanks for coming, Mr. Parker. Call me Peter. Let's zoom in and talk about Peter Parker. Older adult. Fatherly Peter Parker.
Okay. Scruffy looking asshole.
No, what? No, scruffy looking Nerf herder.
No, he's a scruffy looking asshole.
Stop it. He's not an asshole.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Power and Responsibility is giving his son shit for, okay, admittedly, he should get some shit for throwing a guy through a goddamn door. Uh-huh. But he's sitting there and, you know, and I know it's because of the trauma of losing his wife in a horrible fashion, but
yeah.
He's like, it was stupid. It was selfish. Ben's like, I was protecting this kid. And he's like, well, how did that go for you? It's like the hero has been drained out of this man. I understand that's right. What happened, yeah. But we literally have a Danny moment from TMNT. Almost like Ben doesn't like, you know, bolt out of the vehicle.
He doesn't have a Sid Vicious shirt on, but yeah.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, go back. I want to take the time because I have something to say about this. Okay, the panel where Peter comes in. Sorry, I'm late. Thanks for coming, Mr. Parker. Call me Peter. You look at him. I look at him. And if I was not 400 and something pounds, that would be me, right now, today. So,
looking Nerf herder.
Yes.
Okay.
Have you not seen my pictures on Facebook? I haven't shaved in over a year, unfortunately.
That'll TMI, probably dude. TMI.
No, no. My face, you idiot.
I know God, that.
It's not.
Jesus, I wasn't implying any other part of your body.
Yeah, sure you weren't. Anyway, point is, look at his hair, look at his beard.
Scruffy.
For me, for me personally, I have to use my left hand, my left side for everything because the cerebral palsy is my right side. So the fact that his right hand is the hook, I'm like, holy crap, like I was just about to say, if I wasn't 450 pounds, I could almost be Peter Parker. I wish I could be Peter Parker. But, like, I just love the way, and like you said, you're right, we're going to get into this further, but he's a hero who has got the hero all sucked out of him, and not in a good way. And literally, he's wearing a black shirt. I don't think he's going to dance anytime soon. But yeah, you are absolutely right. The next scene in the car. It's definitely yes.
How dare you bring up Bully Parker? I have worked hard for years, and I have done the work and the therapy to forget that movie exists. How dare you traumatize me again, sir? Shame.
You can't see me, but I'm doing like the dance. I'm sitting here doing the dance that. The black suited Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Anyway. Ben gets home and his powers kick in because he can't open a door and he's like, fuck you door. And he just tears this thing to pieces. And then when Aunt May comes in and she's like, you want to explain the front door? It called me names.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, if that had been me, I probably would have said it was being insolent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and she's just like, she knows.
Yeah.
But she doesn't, like, it doesn't come out, like, right now, obviously. And then we go to the next day, and he's got a crush.
Well, no, what do you mean he's got a crush? Wait a minute. Oh, No. I'm still focusing on after he got in the house and the picture of his mom that he has in his arm. But yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, the next day he's got a crush, Faye Ito.
Yeah. He does not have the Riz, as kids today say.
No, you call it charisma, goddammit. I hate that.
His Riz is whack. His drip is whack. He bombs so hard.
I hate Generation Alpha's terminology. I fucking hate it. Oh, God.
Sounds like Mike would rather be cadaverous in this instance, eating hot dogs and talking to some woman in a containment tube.
Well, luckily my woman isn't in a containment tube, but yeah, okay, you know, sure.
I know. And I hear, oh, God, the guy who voiced the question on Justice League.
Oh, Jeffrey Combs.
Thank you. I couldn't remember the last name. I was like, I know the first name, but I was going to say Jeffrey Wright, but that was Commissioner Gordon in a different universe.
That was the Watcher. Jeffrey Wright.
And he's Commissioner Gordon. He's an omniversal being. He can be whatever he wants.
He is, but he's the Watcher first in my mind.
And your mind is not my mind. Moving on.
Uh-huh.
And I just, I like the fact he's sitting there. He's got this tray of food, a thermos, a hot pot with, you know, hot dogs. He's sitting in, like, he's an incel. He's this giant gothic cyborg incel who's been sitting in this room for 12 years, apparently.
Yeah.
Talking to whoever this is in the tube, and we'll get to that. Then we go to...
Wait, who is in the tube?
They don't establish that right now.
But it is the step... Wait a minute. Yeah. Is that Mary Jane?
We'll find out.
Mother... How did I miss that?
And so we go to, like, I don't know, the next day or that afternoon. Peter's, you know, he's a roving reporter. He's on assignment. And, this is literally the guy, like, I know, power and responsibility, I know, as he's talking to Aunt May.
Yep.
And, like, she's flat out says, like, I see things happening with him. I saw them with you. And Peter's like, yeah, he's better off without me. You know it. I know it.
Yep.
You know, and then Ben has this nightmare, like, and we're talking with a lot of blood, and we're talking the elevator scene and the Shining levels of blood, folks.
Yep.
And
you know what? This is interesting to me. So this page 25 or location 25 on the digital here, that page of the six panels of the blood, I don't do horror. I'm very queasy around blood, guts, and gore. This almost, I know it's not this, but like this, the way that this is colored and drawn and done, I know it's blood, but it looks like paint to me. Like it just looks like, I don't know, but I get it.
If just think of the scene, the opening scene of Blade at the blood rave.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. That's what this is.
But yeah, Ben wakes up on the ceiling. Aunt May comes in. Now, come down, dear. I have things to tell you. Takes him to the Parker attic. You know, goes through the stuff and pulls out Peter's ripped top, you know, and that's the end of the first issue. I've got the digital trade again. They don't have alternate covers.
No, well, they do and they don't, I think. I don't remember off the top of my head. That's the one thing that did confuse me about this is because I know, because I can usually tell when something is like, hey, this is the end of this in this trade. Go to the next issue. But I noticed this on these covers. Like, I'm looking here. I'm zooming in. And, oh, no, it does have it. Okay. I didn't see a number on the cover until issue 5. The number, it literally, and this is the problem with this. And as someone who is legally blind, visually impaired, this is the problem with this, okay? And I've talked about this with the Skybound Image Comics Transformer stuff, and I'll talk about that, or I've already... talked about that on a different show. So for me to see the number 2 next to Spidey's foot here, I have to completely zoom in. I didn't even notice it was there because the letter of the number is white against a beige background. Don't do that, comic people. If you're going to have a beige background, you need a dark color to show. Like, literally, I didn't even see it. Couldn't even, like... And you're right, it doesn't have alternate covers, which kind of sucks because we're so used to, hey, this is an alternate cover for issue 1, and then we know the next cover is issue 2. And that does suck. But
And the cover in question is Cadaverous and Peter. Peter. It could be Peter. You know, it could be Ben. Who knows? It's Cadaverous fighting Spider-Man. It could be in the past, could be in the future. Who knows? This opening page with Cadaverous is...
very creepy.
Yeah, just
very, very creepy.
And it'll make sense further on down the line, you know, but importantly, we get to this conversation between May and Ben, intercut with a one-armed photojournalist in a war zone.
Yep.
And May's like... she's trying to make Ben understand why Peter the way she is, or why the way he is, versus Ben, like, absolutely hating his father.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he leaves, he goes to school. Faye spooks him. He spider strings his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, like, versus the day before, and this is where it's like, okay, something's off with the young lady, because now she's all over him, and she loves the fact that he's this, you know, crouching nerd, hidden badass, because he threw Roland through a door.
Yeah, she's she like, even says, and this is the weirdest looking smile, and why does she always have... Okay, so the panel I'm looking at is on location 34. It is the third panel on the right. She always has paint or blood on her. There's blood on her, what looks like to be red paint or blood on her right shoulder, where she says,
she's don't an be artist.
I understand she's an artist. I get that. But most artists don't have paint on them all the time. Don't be ashamed, dude. I mean, it takes a major kahunas to kick some bully butt like that. You did the right thing. What are you doing later? Her smile in this picture, in this image, like...
creepy.
It's like Joker-level creepy.
Punchline level, not quite the Joker.
No, I'm just saying the way that... Yeah, no, it's Joker. It's Nicholson. It really is. The way his smile tips up when he's the Joker kind of thing. Yeah. Very, very Nicholson to me. Just the shape of her mouth and where her teeth... The teeth showing. She looks way too excited. Way too excited. Yeah. You can be excited, but that's a little creepy.
Is that creepy, or is the way it's like, she can't know I'm a freak, weirdo freak. I'm cool. I'm normal. I'm cool. I'm normal. And you know what? I think she's into the whole freak thing, Ben, because God damn.
God damn, yeah. And then
she's
we
like,
get
yeah,
to
the... No, I got that. I like it. Are we going to a party, like a costume party? Dude, I'm the marker. You'll understand when we get there. And she's got, like, playing this all sly, coy. He's yeah. like, I need a costume. Where's the costume? Please, 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 don't be burnt. Don't be burnt. Ah!
Well, he burned it.
Well, yeah, but he was hoping he could get back in time to salvage it. And then May's like, you know, he had more than one.
He had more than one. I love that line. May is one of my favorite characters in this. Absolutely love Aunt May.
Yeah. No, and I was getting Lily Tomlin vibes from...
Absolutely.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Absolutely.
With that, all you ever have to be is yourself.
Yep.
You know, she's like, huh? Huh? Wink, nod, nudge, nudge. And then, you know, Faye's like, ready? And then we immediately cut to the next page. Cadaverous in, okay, either that's more of his kids in all these jars, or he's collecting his own specimens. I don't care to know which.
I don't. This dude is creepy as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually, it'll make some kind of sense in the story, folks.
Right.
But then we go, we see the marker is... you know, apparently she's this anarchist graffiti artist tagger. She says, I need new friends. My friend Trisha, she only eats hummus, like, exclusively.
Oh my god.
I love that, just exclusively. And she's so far down the rabbit hole of burn the cheerleader, save the world kind of rah-rah.
She's not full intense. Goth. She's intense. She's not full goth or anything like that. She's not a goth girl type. She's on the edge of that. But it's like, excuse me, sorry. I'll have to edit that part out. Involuntary reflex.
Yeah.
She's not a full-on goth girl. She's kind of like goth adjacent. She has an attitude like a goth a little bit, but she's also an artist, and she just wants to. Yeah, very emo. There you go. Very
goth emo. But I like, you go to the next page, they start tagging Golden Techs, which I imagine is a tech company. She's putting Predator on there. and she basically gives Ben his version of great power, great responsibility.
Yep.
You know, and then she kind of, it's a, analogous to the line behind the mask, anyone can be Spider-Man, where she says, these suits tell us anyone can be a hero. He's like, you really think so? And then, cheese it. It's the fuzz. And they book it. And then, I can do some. What are you? Oh my God. And they swing off in a very classically posed Spider-Man image of,
you absolutely
know, Faye. I guess she just spray paints in exclusively candy apple red, because all these candy apple red spray cans fall out of her backpack. And I know she's called the Marker, but she's got a very cat-like look to this suit. And, you know, like father, like son, some men just like pussy.
Wow.
Okay, dude. I'm sorry. I apologize. I called myself out at the end of the recording.
Wow. And damn.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the story.
She's, to me, Felicia, Black Cat, she's more loner. She's more, not sullen, but she's more flirty loner than emo loner kind of thing. And I see Faye as like emo loner kind of thing. So she's clingy. So I kind of see the example or the comparison here. But yeah, so they swing off. They speed off with the swinging and the winging and the whatever. And they get to the next ledge where apparently they crash into it. And then all of a sudden there's a Avengers painting there.
They swung right into a billboard.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he's like, I know this is a lot and it's new to me too. And you okay? And she's like, hell yeah.
Yep.
And she has like this Sarah, but I don't mind her art. I'm not a big fan of it, but it's not by any means bad. It's,
right.
You know, it's like Mike was saying about the smile, and then, you know, Faye's got this weird smirk thing going on. And then we go to Peter, who's, you know, I'm assuming he's out in the Middle East. They don't actually establish what country he's gone to. And, and he's like, what's going on over here? All these soldiers are gathered, and he sees his son swinging through NYC, and he's like, oh shit.
Sees him on TV. Yep.
You know, and
I do, outside of the certain facial expressions on Faye, this is the first time I'm seeing this artist's stuff. I like her stuff. I like the backgrounds. I like the color stuff from, is it VC Karamanga or whatever his name is? Their name is, whatever. I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Karamagna, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Like, I like all of that. I like the art. And I can move past the creepy smile on Ben's girlfriend here, or whatever she's supposed to be. But I like how this is done. I really do.
She's a friend.
Who's a girl who's got
high girlfriend potential.
Yay, there you go. That's what it is.
Yeah. So Ben, you know, he's laying on the wall upside down. And I guess something about the spider equilibrium doesn't let the blood rush to your head. And she's like sitting there, and she's, you know, gaga for his Cocoa Puffs. Cause, you know, her whole thing about, you know, damn the man and, you know, save the world. Like, she's all into it and everything. And, you know, she's riding high on this adrenaline rush. And, you know, we've got this creepy insert of Cadaverous smiling, and we see the Oscorp Tower. And then we see the crater that used to be the Oscorp Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's like, this isn't some game, Ben. We aren't just playing dress up. And he has like that requisite, you know, hero moment where he just looks at the camera. He's like, begrudgingly accepts his destiny. Now, I would have to talk to Mr. Abrams himself, but, you know, Ben goes there and he casually lifts this VW bug-sized boulder off of this guy. And hey, everybody, it's Greg Grunberg, J.J. Abrams' best friend. Because I'm almost certain that Sarah drew this character to look like Mr. Grunberg.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Which is cool. I mean,
that's amazing.
It's the Happy Gilmore of J.J. Abrams' universe. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, Happy Hogan. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, Happy Hogan. Yeah.
So, and the next thing we know, the off-brand cyber goth xenomorphs are there. And, you know, you don't seem to be very good at this. I'm trying my best. And then the spider sense.
You feel something tingling
Does your brain tickling? And
yeah.
And he almost gets taken out by the cybermorphs. That's what I'm going to call him.
There you go.
And he's like, you know, gets him to the cops and the emergency workers, and he's pulled a crane down on these things, and he goes home and walks in the door, and it's like every movie you've ever seen where the kid's been out when he wasn't supposed to, and he sneaks in and he gets busted by his parental units, and it's just like you just hear the bum bum bum.
Yeah.
The flow in this story is probably my favorite thing about it. Like, I think it flows very well thus far.
Yeah.
Weird. And again, not a fan of the art, but it's not a negative. I'm just, you know, it's not like she sucks. Like, the characters are all well designed. She has a certain design style. It's, you know, God, I can't remember what animation studio that the Men in Black series or that did the Men in Black animated series.
I don't but remember.
They did another animated series later on, and I noticed how, you know, the character models were very similar to the character models in Men in Black. So, like, it's well put together. You know, we haven't really talked about the colors and the inks. Like, Sarah Pacelli also does inks with the Elisabetta D'Amico and Dave Stewart on colors.
Mm-hmm.
The colors are great. Like, I really like this. You know, you got some firm lines, but not hard lines, if you get my meaning. Soft color palette, not quite watercolors, but not, you know, bam in your face. Speaking of bam in your face, he is getting cyber stalked by Faye because you see his text phone. The dude in the news said you saved him. Okay, I'm coming over. And I was like, you know, I hear the psycho music in the background, just
yep.
And you can hear Ben and May going at it. And I this is like every parent in every teen movie that, you know, has ignored their kid until, you know, the moment of truth like this. And he's like, how dare you show him the suit? And she's like, bitch, please, you haven't been a father to this boy in years. You know, okay, Aunt May didn't actually say that, but
right, but it's
the, I could totally hear in my head Rosemary Harris or Sally Field saying that.
Rosemary Harris, only Rosemary Harris.
God, what's her name? Tom Holland's Aunt May. Why am I blanking so hard right now?
Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, I could totally hear Marissa Tomei dropping an F-bomb like that. But no, it's just when I think the reason I hear it's just there's something magical about somebody you don't expect to swear, and then you hear him drop an F-bomb. Like when I watched the Fright Night remake years ago and David Tennant played the Peter Vincent in that movie, and you hear the Doctor, you know, Uncle Scrooge, the Fugitoid from Ninja Turtles 2012, cursing like that. I was like, I had a big old smile on my face and a warm feeling in my heart, you know. So wait.
You mentioned the animated series for Men in Black. According to, take with a grain of salt, Wikipedia, it was Adelaide Productions under Amblin Entertainment, Columbia TriStar Television.
Yeah.
For the animated series.
I can't remember what other anime. It's just that's
yeah.
So yeah, Peter is you know, I like the cover. It's very basic, well put together, solid covers, which convey something that's happening in the story or will happen in the story. It's a couple of cybermorphs standing over Ben. He's laying face down in a puddle.
So this to me for issue three, as we start issue three here, folks. I know it's the cybermorphs, the xenomorph drone, whatever dudes, but literally seeing him laying there and seeing all the black under it, I was like, no, don't stop. We do not need venom in this.
I think that is a masterful ass pull. There is absolutely first two issues.
No, I know.
It's a color, Mike. It's not a symbiote.
But look at it's black.
It's shadows reflected in oily water after Ben got his ass kicked.
I know. And oily black water liquid tar substance to me is venom, but it's not. Thank God.
oily water. There is no tar involved, and its shadows distorted by the ripples in the water. Moving on. So, yeah, Ben is listening to his dad and Aunt May, and he's doing some heavy thinking. And Peter comes in, and he tries to be a father. Mm-hmm. And I'm quoting, when I say this, I'm quoting Team Four Star Dragon Ball Abridged. It's very much Vegeta and Trunks. Boy, don't make me come up there and be a parent first time for everything.
Yeah.
Because Ben is... he's traumatized from age 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You know, like he doesn't really remember his mom.
Yeah.
All he knows is his dad became this bitter, withdrawn shell of a human being. He's freaking out because he's at this time in his life where your body goes through a lot of changes and weird things start to happen. And fortunately for most of us, it's we stand at attention at odd times and there's weird hair growing out of our bodies. Ben's crawling on walls and he can feel when someone's about to punch him in the back of the head.
That's right.
And Peter's trying to be a dad. Now, when I say that, it's not like he's trying to be a dad as if, you know, okay, yeah, right, Peter, too little, too late. Like, he's honestly cares for his son. I don't for a moment think he doesn't care for his son. But he comes in, he's like, well, I can't protect you, blah, blah, blah. And Ben's like, I thought I was a monster and you weren't here. Get the fuck out. And then the house explodes.
Yeah, and then the house explodes. Before all of that, though, when he goes into the room, I was expecting the conversation to be something different. When the panel is when Ben is upside down on the ceiling and Peter is sitting on the bed and he said, thin walls, huh? Like, literally, I thought that was going to be the start of a different conversation. I like how Peter tries to talk to him and Ben's like, don't talk about her. Shut up. I love all of this. I think this is great.
This is one of the most perfectly executed father-son, like parent-child conversations I've ever seen in comics. Because this is all legit real, and it's a confusing, messy time in both their lives. And, you know, they've both got this trauma that they haven't even come close to resolving working on in 12 goddamn years.
Yep. Like,
this had to happen in order for them to move on and heal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like I had conversations like this with my parents growing up, you know, where I was angry and they're just trying to help and it's just not working. And then we get an Abrams version of May praying in the first Raimi movie and Goblin comes through the wall and Peter gets Wolverined.
Yeah, he does.
And I like how they're kind of with the appearances of Cadaverous, they're all kind of leading up to this because you know, he's been watching TV screens and he sees things and it's, you know, it's like, imagine Agent Smith sitting behind a desk in an office watching looking for scenes of Neo.
Yeah, very much. I absolutely love this.
And I like that it was you. I could hear Sir Ian McDermott. Like, this dude has... I know I heard said Jeffrey Carver. No, this dude is talking like the goddamn Emperor.
Yeah, absolutely he is. Most definitely.
And it's like, you led us to the key. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Ben has these flashbacks, and next thing you know, he's sitting out front of the homestead, and, you know, Faye's there, and, you know, I think I was talking a little negatively. I definitely was talking a little negatively about Faye, but, I mean, this is, you know, right out of the playbook of cute, artistic, potentially girlfriend person coming around on, like, getting over the adrenaline high, and actually showing a human emotion, and Ben's just a little sitting there, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and in the panel, she raises his mask up, and she asks him what happened. It was here. It took Dad. What did? Cadaverous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that panel, and I have to say again on the art, even though I know that's blood, I don't understand why we had to make it an X on his cheek. This is not X marks the spot, but he goes on to say, I couldn't move. I didn't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And he says, I think I might. And then we go to.
Faye says.
Oh, she says that? It's literally... yeah. I I looked at the you're right, it's coming out of her mouth.
Yeah. They do in a teen superhero movie, of which there have been a few, normally the kids decide to break into the villain's lair and confront him directly. No, they actually go to the authorities, i.e. they go into Stark Plaza and demand to see Tony, and the, you know, not Mrs. Arbogast, who is the old lady, kind of a battle axe secretary that Tony had for years in the comics, who is an absolute joy, played by Tyne Daly in the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. Nice. And I love the threat that Faye utters. You don't get Tony Stark here right now, you're going to be canned faster than tomato soup. And all in my head was Kelso in That 70s Show, burn!
Yep.
And then these iron drones in some pretty slick suits, because that's the security they have. They literally pick them up by their arms and dump them outside. And they get confronted by Riri Williams, Ironheart.
Yep.
And, oh, God, what happened to Peter?
Yeah. No.
No want. No want.
No want. No need. No need scared. This is not horror comic. Stop it.
Oh, it's too late, Mike. We're well into the horror comic genre.
I know. I know.
But, so if you've seen The Mandalorian, Peter's in a tube. He's his midsection, his gut's been ripped open. He's got all these tubes feeding in and like connecting to him. Think of when Fennec Shand got her cyber upgrade in The Mandalorian, and she's got like the robo guts, like Ming-Na Wen's character. And
but that wasn't as graphic as this is.
No, like, I'm just trying to give people like a frame of reference. Like, think H.R. Giger by way of Hellraiser, and you're about there. And then Peter's eyes open. He's got this ashen skin and this bloodshot eyes. And it's like, I swear to God, if Ben has to fight a zombified father, one, that would be cool. Two, that would be gross. And three, I'll be drawing parallels to Godzilla, the animated series, where Godzilla fought Cyber Godzilla in the Monster Wars trilogy. We go to, Valhalla Cemetery, and Faye's giving this Pepper Potts from Iron Man Armored Avengers style info dump.
Yes, I love that.
We find that, remember the Great Fall, and like the Avengers are clearly dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in this secret entrance, down, down, down. I love Riri's, like, the kids are just going back and forth. She literally doesn't say anything until, prepare yourselves, he's an obsessed, unhinged, drunken narcissist, and unfortunately, he might be helpful. And then we go in, and I love the fact they have the hot rod from the first Iron Man movie.
Yep.
We get a gray-haired, ponytailed, sunglasses indoor, drunk Tony Stark.
Yep.
Who has one of the best lines in this series. This is an adorable security breach.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Now,
I need to hear Robert Downey Jr. say that.
You know what? I do hear Robert Downey Jr. Can't remember the name of the voice actor. I'll look it up later. It's not
Robert Sherman. Hayes.
Sorry?
Talking about the 94 Iron Man series? Robert Hayes was
Iron
Man.
No, I was thinking of the, I could hear Adrian Pasdar, who voiced Tony Stark in like the first three seasons of Avengers Assemble.
Right.
I could hear him. There's the guy that came on afterwards who was doing a Tony Stark, an RDJ impression. So
that was Mick Wingert, I think.
Yeah, I can definitely hear that voice. But, you know, it's mostly RDJ, little Adrian Pasdar. And what Tony does, like, this dude is just, he autographs Ben's cheek because he thinks he's a fanboy.
Yeah.
And the thing that this made me laugh the first time I read this was there's this Tumblr post who this guy talking about, he met RDJ after Iron Man 1 and 2, and he didn't have anything for him to autograph except for like this, I think it's like a $1 bill. And apparently this has been confirmed that he's like, are you asking me to do it? RDJ is like, are you asking me to deface government property? Yes. Gimme.
Yep.
It's totally that moment. And Tony does his best to absolve himself of any responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
in this, like, he's just like, no, don't want living down here for a decade, happy in my bunker, don't need the outside world, go, shoot, go. And then Ben's like, Ariri's, look who I brought, and he wipes out on the floor, this is cold, and he realizes who Ben is. He, oh my god, he's like, what happened? Ben starts crying because he's like, it is so totally unfair that Ben has to deal with this. Like, he just lost his dad. He hasn't even begun to deal with the trauma of not having his mom. And we get this quick flashback to the lab, and there's a cybermorph who's goes up with her claw, and she etches the human stomach on the glass for some reason.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
And, you know, Tony goes to work. He pulls up a pizza from under a bunch of stuff, and I could only think of that. Do you like penicillin on your pizza?
Yep. Wait. Is this? It is. That's why the xenomorph cybermorph did this. That's the MJ cybermorph, I think. That's why she did it.
We'll find out.
I think.
Foreshadowing. But, so, you know, Tony reactivates Friday, and I totally hear the Irish voice.
Yeah.
I can't remember the actress. You know, and Tony gets kind of spacey, and Riri's like, I've seen this before. Where have I seen it? This is Stark Tech. And I'm like, no, it's totally Stark Tech. It's a stupid name, by the way. It's my technology. And then Tony, you know, because he's coming out of this alcoholic haze, he's like, is that a birthmark on your face?
Yeah.
And he's like, you signed it. Remember, no time. Technically, only two people in the world still know how to build this armor. One's a billionaire playboy philanthropist. Hello. And the other hates her boss and wears pantsuits. I am so close to quitting.
Yep.
Like, this is totally RDJ and Gwyneth Paltrow Pepper, levels of camaraderie.
Yep.
And then Ben's like, well, if you didn't make it, who did? And Faye's like, it doesn't matter who made it. What matters is finding it. You know, don't you have sensors and tech? Launch satellites into space. Shoot lasers and robots. And I love how Tony is like, he's admitting to all this stuff, but he's still like putting it off. It's not my responsibility. I live in a basement. I talk to a virtual AI, you know, and he's just refusing to do anything. And then smash. What was that? Nothing. Stark. Okay, maybe something. So super fast. Tell me, like, as fast as you can, how would they follow you? Why would they still follow you? I don't know. He said something about my dad being a key and
Friends, we need to go now.
Yeah. And it's just going into, you know, this next scene, and they basically confirm that is it. We thought it was Mary Jane, but it turns out that the lady in the tube is this lady that was connected to the founding of Stark Industries.
Right. The what's her name? Oh God, they say what her name is.
Minka.
That's what. Yeah, because it was Minka, this other dude, and then one other dude. So this is so silly. I'm loving this comic, folks. Hating on it whatsoever. I'm just making an analogy here. This is these three people, this woman, the guy that's the cadaverous dude, and the other third dude that's supposed to be in this somewhere, wherever the hell he is. It's basically the Terrific Trio from Batman Beyond, the magma, the water lady, and the other guy.
Another masterful ass pull, Mike. I approve.
I'm used to those, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, and Tony's telling, like, they're developing the key, which is this radical medical technology involving pods, you know, and basically it's said in conversation that the cybermorphs are the people who came out of there, but they were rotten, they were withered, you know, It's the Peter was involved because right. it's it was based on his grandfather Richard Parker's work, who's right. I think is the third guy.
Yep.
And then you meant Minka Tross and Ivan Renz. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one guess as to who Ivan is in the story. And mm-hmm. as they're all making their way out to the car, as this, it would be a really cool scene in the movie as the heroes are trying to escape and the bad guy is doing this monologue and this bolt of lightning, foreshadowing, mm-hmm. Blows up the limo and we see the cyber goth Marvel zombies that yeah. are the Avengers, who apparently were only five people in this mm-hmm. universe. We got, you know, Captain America, Thor, who looks metal as fuck with that axe.
He does, yeah. Say.
The Cyber Hulk and Cyber Widow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, we end with the team, like, what the F, as yeah. you know, seen. And I do love that last panel of, you know, this is metal AF album cover material here with the
side. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it is. Absolutely.
You know, this.
I didn't even think that that was Widow. I thought that was MJ, but no, I know. We're getting to that, but wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you saw her on the billboard and then the statues there in the park. And the look of sorts, like, I don't think they based it on this, but there is this sci-fi horror movie called I think it was Hardware, where Dermot Mulroney from The Practice is in this scrounger in the future, and he finds this busted old robot head in a junkyard and gives it to his girlfriend, who's like a metal artist, and it turns out this thing is like an, you know, 12th gen cyber commando, which wakes up and starts building like this rickety looking body for itself. And, you know, looks kind of like something from the movie Virus with Jamie Lee Curtis, and just all wires and exposed bits, and looks very much like these guys. As we get into a, probably not in this story, image on the fourth issue cover with Spider-Man fighting a giant spider.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's in here. He fights the spider in here.
You know. And we get into the story and we see Minka has been resurrected by Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's like, we can be together again. Tell me you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And
being happy.
Yeah, she throws him through a wall. Well, what, she's like, hey, what's under my skin behind my eyes? Like, she's, I did it for you. It was all for you. And he's just standing there, and it's like that moment in any horror movie where the villain has, you know, it's where analogous to when the monster meets the bride in Bride of Frankenstein, and he's like happy because there's someone like me, and she's like, what the fuck am I? Mm-hmm. And I like how they end that page with, they're gonna fucking kill us. And then, you know, the cyber Avengers are going after the team, and the Hulk's got a good pitching arm because Riri goes flying.
Yes, she does.
That's a fastball special if I've ever seen one.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
He's like, what do we do? Do we have a plan? No idea. I think we should have one, says Faye. And Tony's like, Thor, buddy, we didn't know. We thought she died. We did. Mm-hmm. And God, I love the design on these guys. And
yeah, they're so, you know, good.
I like Faye's her chutzpah, her moxie, because she's standing on top of the Thor statue with her mask on, and Ben's got his max on, and this feels like half an idea. It's in progress.
Yep.
And here we have definitive age here. I'm 15.
Mm-hmm.
12. So he was 3 years old at
the funeral. He was 3 years old at the funeral. Okay. And I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't know. Like, that mask.
I barely have armpit hair.
Yeah. Well, like, the funeral scenes at the beginning of the book that we talked about, he just looks... Okay. My family, all of my family, oh, and most families I've ever known in my 44 years of being on this planet, will say, oh, you've gotten bigger, or you've grown, or this or that. They don't mean you've gotten fat. they mean, oh my God, I can't believe how big you are now, how grown you are now compared to the last time I saw you. So at the beginning of the book, when we see three-year-old Peter, because we can definitively say that he was three years old. Ben. Damn it. Ben, Peter, they're all dead. Doesn't matter. Anyway, point is to me, looking at those images of the kid, he looked like he was too big to be 3 years old. But since they've defined it, okay, fine, I'm good.
And we go back to Cadaverous' lab, and looks like he had he's still lying on the floor, and then Minka comes up, and she's starting to turn into something.
Yeah.
And Peter, I don't know if he's conscious or just the artist draws is like this dead blank stare, and he might actually be dead. We don't know yet. Ivan's trying to explain what happened, why he did it. Mm-hmm. He blames
Stark.
Yeah, we blame Stark and Richard Parker.
Yeah.
And then we see, when I mentioned the bride earlier, it's not all that fall off because we see Ivan digging up her corpse.
Yep.
And, he uses Peter's DNA from the fight in the beginning. And it turns out his blood was the key because I guess Richard used his DNA in some way in the, when they were developing the pods, 100 years ago, what they mentioned. Also, you're sucking this blood out of the snow and it's filthy post fight snow. Probably not the best sample, just saying.
Yeah, no.
And then, Peter's just floating in his Bacta tank with his cyber guts hanging out. And, Minka breaks him open. And, she's turning into a spider lady.
Yeah, she is.
I mean, when you first see her morphing, she looks like, some barely... The flesh is barely holding the demon within back. And in here, she start looking like a reject from a Hellraiser movie.
Yep. I got to go back for one second, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I so hear Christopher Daniel Barnes from 94 in my head.
Shocker!
No, not that. But yes, that voice, that guy. This is a bit awkward. I'm very naked. I so hear 94 Peter in my head.
I could hear that too. I might also say two other great voices of Spider-Man, the great Neil Patrick Harris and Josh Keaton.
Josh Keaton, 100%.
But I could definitely hear that.
Christopher Daniel Barnes, yeah.
Well, yeah, but no, I personally hear, NPH. But, and Minka's like, initially she rejected what she was, and then she's like, I kind of dig it. And he's talking to like, my body's shifting, bones stretching, cracking. And she's like, well, he doesn't have enough juice left to purify the key. And then Cadaverous is like, but there is another. And then we see Tony, he's getting the business.
Does he really say that?
There's another?
Yes. Does Cadaverous really say that? Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, motherfucker. They crossed over Star Wars and Marvel.
And it's a passing reference at best. Tony's running and the kids are running from Cyber Hulk. And, he's about to get the... get John Walker'd in Falcon and the Winter Soldier by Cap when, thank God, Riri's alive and she didn't get splattered against a parking lot like I thought she did.
Yeah.
She's got the Iron Heart suit. Ben webs up Hulk and it's like, I love the Hulk, but in my head I hear a Hulk voice, Lou Ferrigno, Mark Ruffalo, what have you. Just you hear the roar and you translate it to English, Hulk hate puny bug man. Mm-hmm. Hulk also stuck.
But what I love about this entire comic with the spider powers, we are thwipping everywhere. I love it.
Yeah. And Riri, Marker is just blasting Natasha in the face with her blue paint. Nice to see she's got more than one color. Riri throws the Hulk into Natasha's statue, breaks the head off. It sounds like, because the way they draw the zombies when they're raging, Yep. Like they're drawn to see, like you look at the speech bubble and the lettering and it's like, ah, but then you see Natasha for a second, my face right before she gets splattered by her own head.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the lab and Minka has fully turned almost into a giant spider. And this is where I had to work really hard at holding my arachnophobia in control. Cause
same,
I couldn't watch the movie Arachnophobia until my mid 20s without flinching hard whenever a spider moved, you know.
I watched that movie. Okay. We got to talk about Arachnophobia for a minute, because I watched that movie when I was, I don't know, really little. When did Arachnophobia come out? I know it was in the 80s. Anyway, I watched that movie when I was really little, like 6, 7, or 8, somewhere in there. The only scene that I laughed at that I actually liked was the nail gun scene. Every other scene in that movie scared the hell out of me.
I could think of one other scene you might like where John Goodman shows up in his not quite Ghostbusters 2 uniform. Let's rock.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and then was it Delbert? He starts going ham with the insecticide and crushing spiders and just being a badass as only Mr. Goodman can.
Yep.
Yeah, we go back to the lab. Minka's, she's got the body of a spider with the face of a human, which is just nightmare inducing. She's now gone completely around the bend. It's like, you know, you're pitiful, you're foul, you're weak-willed, you know. Just think of like every harpy wife. And what's the, ever see Death Becomes Her?
Yep.
Yeah, it's like that scene right before, like, Glenn Close is parading Bruce Willis, and then she's like, come on, you loser, and then he snaps, he just takes the finger and boop over the edge.
And I was wrong. I need to make sure so that way when I edit this, I don't have people coming after me. Arachnophobia came out in 1990. I was 10. I saw it a year later on VHS when I was 11, and it scared the crap out of me because I don't do spiders whatsoever.
Yeah. Sorry, I was wrong. It was Meryl Streep.
Ah, yes. 1992. Death Becomes Her is Meryl Streep.
Yeah. So we go back to the aftermath, and, you know, Avengers Park has been reduced to a fine rubble.
Yep.
You know, Peter's like, I got to find my dad. I got to save him. Then Tony's like, neurochips, old Stark tech. They use to control their test subjects. And Marker's like, oh, geez. And, you know, Spider-Man and the Brooklyn Bridge is like Godzilla flattening Tokyo. It's just not right if you don't have it.
Yep.
Because we see Peter, you know, webbed up, which is a new thing for him.
Yes.
They're like, I am sure some reporter is going to say it was a giant spider. And there's Spider-Man. It was his fault. And then they're like that. It's her. It's Minka. And then Faye, all of a sudden, like, she's freaking out because it's just dawning on her into the bag full of crazy that she has willingly dove headfirst into. And she's like, kill you or eat you or something equally gross, like putting babies in you. They'll make you explode. And, you know, thus validating my assertion that these are off-brand xenomorphs.
Absolutely. I've never said they were.
You can't do this. I don't like you using my words against me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. Watch me. And like father, like son, makes with the daring do.
Yeah, makes with the daring do.
Yeah, and I like how Peter's sitting there. It's almost like Peter B. Parker in the Spider-Verse movies, like just right there. He's like, hey, Spider-Man. Hey, yep. How you doing?
Yep.
I'm a little stuck right now.
Yep.
And then this giant talking spider, it's like, all you have to do is ask. And I love it. No. You are super fugly.
Yeah, super, yeah.
Fugly to the max. Mm-hmm. And at this point, she doesn't really look like a spider. She just looks like a huge tick.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ivan's watching from his headquarters, and it feels disingenuous to call him cadaverous because he's clearly not the villain anymore.
Right.
Like, yeah, the main villain. He's gone from being Dr. Frankenstein to being, you know, Igor. Yeah. And, you know, the SWAT team shows up and starts attacking Minka Spider, or Spider Minka.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if their code blue, which is an in-universe SWAT team that is exclusively called out to superhuman events.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe deep cut. Ben, in the meantime, while Spider-Minka does her best King Kong, Ben is fighting a swarm of cybermorphs.
Yep.
And Peter keeps telling him to run. And he's like, I got this, Dad. I got this. And then he's finally, my boy, as the cybermorphs knock him out and carry him off. And then we get this sweet. We do have a variant cover here. It's a,
yep.
beautiful painted artwork by Gabriel Delato.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this, the base cover, which is Ben over Peter looking back at a bunch of cybermorphs in the background.
Yep.
And I know what you said about the white numbering there, and I do agree with you on that, but I dig how all the covers in the trade have that arch of spider webbing. Web over
yeah.
the top.
No. I love nice that. Thing. All is, I'm like, okay, so this fifth issue. This was the first time when I read this. This was the first time I noticed there was numbers on the issue, on the cover pages, and then I had to go back to the other covers, to issue 4, to issue 3, to issue 2, and all that stuff. Issue 2. Holy crap! What the hell am I talking about? But like I said, I think it's issue 3 that I had the cover issue, the cover problem with. Let me just scroll fast here. Come on. No, it was, I don't know. Whatever the beige one was, I think it was probably issue 2. But the point is that, yeah, these numbers are very hard to see in the trade. And it's not just Marvel that does this kind of stuff. Like I said earlier in the show, Image Comics, Skybound Entertainment under Image Comics, they are also doing this with the Transformers book currently. It's not a bad thing. It's just I wish it was visual. I wish I was actually able to see what it says, but it is what it is. Well, we open with young Ben Parker.
Yeah, and, you know, at the funeral and, well, a post-funeral, because, you know, it's the day that his dad walked out of his life. And you get the, not justification, but you get the logic that Peter was working with. You know, you saw what happened. May that thing wants me. There's no stopping him. The Avengers are gone. I'm a danger to my own son. And, you know, it's you. You asked to be sent an assignment as I'm asking you to watch my boy. And, you know, I think it's a very selfish thing that Peter did, mm-hmm. but it's understandable given the trauma.
Yep.
And that's the thing with, like, I don't believe that there are true, like, the odd time. I don't believe people are inherently assholes. You know, everyone's decent until proven otherwise, but you shouldn't judge people when they've gone through shit and they're doing something nasty. And, you know, I called him a bad father and an asshole earlier, but, you know, I understand why. And once you get to this point, you will understand why. You don't have to like it, but you can at least understand.
Yep.
And then Ben wakes up and he's got cyber, well, not cyber guts, but he's got all these hoses hooked into his guts to, you know, suck out his sweet, sweet life juice. Cadaverous looms over him and surrounded by cybermorphs.
Mm-mm.
And he's like, Ben's like, no, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was all for her, wasn't it? It was all for you, Damien. It was all for you. It's The Omen. Go watch it. It's a great horror movie. your searcher, she died. This was all for her. Taking my dad, killing my mom, blowing up Oscorp. Was that all to be with Minka and cadavers? Silence.
Mm-hmm.
I said silence.
Yep.
And then Ben, being the natural born smartass that he is, like his father before him,
mm-hmm.
knows that he's sussed it out that, you know, this is what he is. And he starts intentionally egging on cadavers, and then he realizes he overplayed his hand a little bit because Cadaverus puts this cyber hand on his face. I will crush your skull.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, could you save my dad? And the MJ Morph rescues Ben, grabs the syringe filled of purified Ben juice that's going to heal everybody.
Yeah.
And forget what exactly happens to the rescue morph here. But her head's working, like she's going against her programming, so she's suffering, you know, pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, I could, you know, leave me before I turn back into his thing. And
yeah,
kind of have this like end of Jedi moment where, you know, does this hurt or does this help? And, you know, it's like, we got to do something. I mean, don't we have a plan besides running? I just saved your life. Gratitude would be nice. And then Ben suddenly, I'm like the running plan. And then Iron Man to the rescue.
Yep. Good old Iron Man.
And so, you know, Ironheart goes up to fight Spider-Minka. Clearly, Faye, I mean, the marker has no concept of the word mortality. Because she, like, clearly this woman, this girl is not well in the head. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just like, clearly, woman, you are climbing 100 feet in the air on a giant spider web while your new friend is fighting a giant
spider.
Mutated spider.
Mm-hmm.
You've skipped some levels in the relationship.
Yeah, really?
And then Ben and the team show up. You know, oh, thank God, I need my friends alive. And then Peter's like, I thought you said you didn't have friends, son. That was before, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts to talk and breathe and blink. I'm so yep. old.
So I love that. I screenshotted that. That is so me. Absolutely. I want to skip ahead just a little bit because I love when Peter is finally free. This will save you, restore you to what you were. You're not just some soldier, a child of Cadaverous. Why'd you help my son? Who are you? I broke down, and I'm going to try not to break down when I say this. I think you know, Tiger. God damn it, JJ. Motherfucker.
I'm calling this an emotional lens flare.
Oh, yes. This is why this story, to me, is better than Dark Web. Right fucking here. This fucking line. Oh my God. No, you didn't.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. But damn. And yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah. And while this is happening, while no actually less important in the background, Minka is, you know, body slam the bridge. Everyone drops. Ben drops the syringe.
Yeah.
I love Riri's just, I'm still battling the same monster in case anyone cares.
Yeah.
And we have the, no, I am your father moment with MJ and Peter. This Cadaverous shows up. Give me the key. Don't have it. She does. You injected me? Tiger, no. How dare you steal my sacrifice out from under me? And at this point, Minka has totally turned into a tick. She is not a spider. She is a goddamn tick.
She's a goddamn tick. Yeah. But the thing is, like, of course Peter is going to save MJ. That's what he fucking does. Like, absolutely. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. And I do love the moment where I don't know where Faye got this gun from, but she's got this giant, and I know I really try not to swear too much when I do the show, but she's got this giant, dirty, hairy, fuck off gun.
Yep.
That she's like, click, clickety, click, click. Why is it shooting? The safety's on.
He's on.
And then, you know, she gets slapped by Minka, who then gets slapped by a partially healed MJ, who I guess like the whole red veiny stuff is part of the whatever cyber process Cadaverous used on her. It's like, Peter, is he okay? 37 bones fractured, 3 major organs failing. He's dying.
Yeah.
And I just damn it, Peter. This is the thing that almost made me cry. Like, they have this moment of catharsis and revelation, and Peter, one, like, he shoves them off the bridge, like the beginning of the story.
Yep.
And
blows up.
Yeah, we go to, it's another funeral.
Uh-huh.
I do have to notice, when you go back to the page right now, Peter's like, now let's get going. And he shoves them, and everyone has the spider sense lightning bolts around their head.
Yep.
I love that. And just that, and that shot of Peter and Mary Jane looking at Ben right before they get shoved off by Peter. I don't know if Sarah Pacelli did this on purpose, but oh God, what's his name? Jim from The Office, married to Emily Blunt.
Oh, God, that guy.
God, I don't remember. Brain farting so hard.
Hey, Google, who's married to Emily Blunt? John Krasinski.
Yeah, damn. Anyway, yeah, it looks very much like John Krasinski there, which I thought was a really cool, because I always thought John Krasinski could have played Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or at least voiced him in a cartoon, because he's got that very sarcastic kind of voice.
Yep.
But yeah, so it's after the few, Ben's, you know, just doing some dishes, trying to keep busy, letting his mom, you know, go through the process. May walks in with a familiar looking suitcase. And we've established now that, well, Ben's going to be Spider-Man and Mary Jane's going to be Spider-Woman or Spinneret or
something
like that. And I do love when they end comics like this is, you know, quote unquote sequel bait. And I don't
They haven't done one yet.
What's that?
They haven't done one yet.
I've said sequel bait.
I know, but I'm saying I want a fucking sequel. That's what I'm saying.
That doesn't guarantee a sequel. In fact,
I know.
I would guarantee it's never going to happen. But I love sequel bait. It's like the Neo flying off at the end of The Matrix, or the DeLorean going back to the future at the end of the original Back to the Future. You know, it's never too late, because they're talking about, you know, you have to, you get second chances in life. It can change you. We have to be who we are, even when it hurts. And then we get a couple of, that's the end of the story. We get a couple of really good alternate covers. The first one's by Ed McGuinness and Laura Martin. And I have been a lifelong fan of Ed McGuinness. Like, I originally came in contact with his art through a Wolverine annual. In the 90s, where he's in Japan, and it was during the time where he was wearing like the bandana cowl mask and he had the bone claws, and he gets in this adventure where he ends up fighting Silver Samurai and the Red Ronin, which is this giant Jaeger-sized robot from the Marvel Godzilla comic.
Right.
And he's always had like a very solid, like very anime, very kind of chunky art style. He's toned down and he's perfected his craft now.
Yeah.
Because you see this sweet cover with Spider-Man fighting a bunch of cybermorphs. We get decent cover by Jason Polan. We get a pretty good cover from Umberto Ramos, who I think is a vastly underrated comic artist.
Yeah, I love Ramos. I love his stuff.
And he's one of my favorite Spider-Man artists. You know, he's up there. We get a Chip Kidd cover, which is I mean, it kind of looks like a graffiti piece, so it could be the marker cover. We get a Sarah Pacelli variant. So, you know, when we said earlier there weren't any variants, it didn't look like there were any variants.
No, there are. What we were saying was, if you don't remember from an hour ago or so, folks, or however how long it is since I've said that, what we said was normally in these trades, in the trade paperback collected editions and the soft covers, and sometimes even in the hard covers, when you get to the end of issue one, you usually see a variant cover of issue one, and then you see the issue two, main cover. So that's what we were saying about how there weren't cover split-ups, but all of the covers are in the most of it, if not whatever.
Yeah, it's just not set up in the usual way.
Yeah, it's not set up in the usual way.
We get a quartet of Sarah Pacelli and Dave Stewart covers at the end. A couple of the variants right at the end, these are all deep cut Spider-Man lore covers. Like there's an issue 2020 variant, which is a reference to, you know, Marvel 2020, which is where Iron Man 2020 Arno Stark comes from. We get a sweet Giuseppe Camuncoli, Edgar Delgado 2099 variant cover, because Miguel. Granted, this is, how long ago did this come out? Oh, wow. Not even that long ago. Only like 5 years. Thought it was a bit longer. But I think my favorite out of these like rando alternate covers at the end is Peter let himself go, Spider-Man.
Yes.
Which is, and they say it's a Marvel's X variant, which is a reference to the Earth X trilogy of the 90s, where it's in the future and everyone's mutants or inhumans or something. And Reed mm-hmm. Richards is Dr. Doom, and he lives inside a hermetically sealed giant cyber or giant Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, overall, I like the story.
Mm-hmm.
As we get into our ratings here, why don't you spell out the ratings for the listeners?
Oh, boy, the ratings. Well, the ratings haven't really changed. They've just kind of evolved since we did an update on the Geekcast Radio Universal rating system, which is now called the Geek Meter, as I'm waiting for the website to load.
The Geekometer?
No, we couldn't do that because of other legal issues. But we have technically the same ratings. We do use half points because that counts. 5.0, 4.5, 4.0, 3.5, whatever. 5.0 is masterpiece. This one's a game changer, genius in every way. It smashes expectations and leaves you speechless. Generations will talk about it. Must experience. 4.5 is remarkable. Top of the class. Fans of the genre would be crazy to miss this. It has a few flaws, but they are dwarfed by its awesomeness. A huge leap forward. 4.0 is really good. High quality fun. There are some issues, but they won't ruin your experience. You might even forgive them on a rewatch or a reread or whatever. Then we have 3.5, good. It's a mixed bag, but the good stuff outweighs the bad stuff. There might be one amazing element and lots of fun moments that make the flaws easier to swallow. They are not deal breakers, though, but they do hold it back. 3.0 is average. Meh, it's not the bad, but it's not that bad, but it's not amazing either. Nothing really that stands out, and it's forgettable. 2.5 is below average. You guys get it, right? Like, yeah. I don't need to read all of the rest of this. I think the only one I'm going to read is 0.5, abysmal. Pure underrated failure. Any glimmer of hope is drowned out by frustration, incompetence, forget it ever existed. 0.5 is and then 0 is pure garbage. Unwatchable, unplayable, unreadable. This is the worst thing ever created in its entire medium. Avoid it like the plague or risk a lifetime of misery. You've been warned. There's only one rating for Spider-Man Bloodline in my eyes. There's nothing in here. Yes, there were like the blood stuff and obviously the stuff when Peter had was with the tubes and whatever. That's just one thing that kind of grossed me out, but it didn't gross me out enough to like dock it points. This is easily for me a masterpiece. This might be my favorite Spider-Man comic I've read in the last 5 years.
High praise indeed. I mean, for me, I know there's no hash marks. I'm stuck between 3.5 and 4. Like, it's a solid story overall, mm-hmm. very emotional. I think it's very well written. Like, kudos to the Abrams.
Yep.
Senior and junior there. And again, like I said earlier, I'm not a fan of the art. It's not that it's bad. It's just
not your thing.
Yeah, it's just not, you know, blowing smoke up my skirt. So
why are you wearing skirts? You're not in Ireland.
It's a figure of speech, Mike. God, you're almost as bad as Ben with comments like that.
Trust me, folks. I don't want him to take his skirt off.
Don't respond. Anyway, yeah. So
it's a jab. Like it's a jab.
Yeah. Like I said, between 4 and 3.5.
Yep.
Like, I dug it. I would recommend it to fan of Spider-Man. Oh, so
absolutely.
This fans of alternate
universes.
Alternate, you know, timelines, universes like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any, really anybody outside of those two, out of comics fans or Spider-Man fans in general,
mm-hmm.
would really, you know, vibe on this. So, you know, it is what it is. It again, it's by no means bad. It's just... No.
It's not,
you
know, bad at all.
It's going to appeal to a very select clientele, let's say.
But I think that clientele, once they see the name that's attached to the book, they will think about Mission Impossible. They will think about Joyride. They will think about Mission Impossible 3. They will think about 2009 Star Trek. They will think about Super 8. They will think about Felicity from 1998. So once you see JJ's name and you see his son's name, even though I don't think his son has done much other, I could be wrong.
I think he was like a kid when they wrote this together.
Yeah, and that's fine. Okay, that's fine. But I'm saying, okay, that's the other thing. All the movies I just listed plus Felicity. And then you take Alias? Like, literally, JJ created two of the best and so vastly different television shows of the late 90s, early 2000s in Felicity and Alias. And then obviously he went on to create Lost in 2004, and everybody has, as fans of that, is whatever. But that's my point. If you've watched any of JJ's stuff, if you know how he is, if you like the stuff that he does, you're going to like this book. At least I think they will. I could be wrong. I've been wrong in the past, so I don't know.
Gasp! Oh,
what?
Yeah, he admitted that he's only human.
I always admit that I'm only human. I don't have any, you know, Riddler than a god am I. I don't have any of those. No. I'm always only human. Anyway, folks, I have got something big cooking for the show. I don't know how I'm going to get it done, but we are at episode 563. In about 20 or so, maybe less episodes, episode 580 to 599. It's going to be a big undertaking and a big research project, and I need one or two hosts per episode per year. So 580 to 589, comics of the 80s. And then 590 to 599, comics of the 90s. So basically, each episode is like 590 is 1990, 591 is 1991, and so on, kind of thing. So that's what I'm working on for the year-end part of the pullbag. The pullbag will end for 2024 on, let me see here, blah, 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 blah. Well, technically it would, whatever. December 31st, January 1st, 2025, whatever. Even though it's not, technically I should just end it on Christmas, since Christmas is the final Wednesday of the year. But yes, I'm going to be working on that. That's the big year-end thing that I'm working on for the pullback because of time and life and everything else that has come up. I have not been able to do the full daily thing to get to 600 episodes. And once we start episode 600, that will be 90 Nights of Nightwing. So episode 600 to 690, 3 months. Hopefully we can. So far, I only have listed from episode 600 to 660, I think. So I need 30 more Nightwing comics, but I have a whole list, and I will talk with JT and I will talk with other people about doing all of this stuff, but that's what the plan is for the pullbag for the year-end stuff for 2024. What else have you got going on, sir? You got your comic connoisseurs, you got your
Sunday funnies.
Sunday funnies, there you go.
And yeah, well, I mean, going to be starting up Sunday funnies again with Birdman pretty soon, comic connoisseurs, see what happens there. And then, that's pretty much it, aside from, you know, keeping a roof over my head.
There you go. That's always good. Where can people find you on social media, sir?
You can find me under most platforms, at JT from Saskatoon, mostly Instagram and Facebook. I dabble in Twitter and barely at that. So, you know, poke around. I'm sure you'll find me. Not like that, you sick fuck.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. All right, folks, coming up inside the pullbag, I honestly have no clue. So I am on Facebook, TFG1Mike. You can follow at Geekcast Radio, the network, on Facebook. The pullbag is on Facebook. We are on Twitter at Geekcast Radio, at the pullbag. I am at TFG1Mike. All that good stuff. And yeah, coming up, the next episode after this will be Skybound Entertainment's Void Rivals number 11. And then hopefully, if I can get a hold of Joe Reed, we are going to do Radiant Black Volume 5, The Catalyst War. And then after that, I don't know what's happening. I need to plan it out. I need to schedule and figure out what I'm doing from episode 566 to 599. Well, I know what I'm doing to 599, but 566 to 579 is what I need to figure out. So I will figure that out at some point here in the future. For now, though, we're going to go to a quick ad break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff, and we will come back to close the show formally right after this.
Go, Web, go!
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, Jared, I have this idea for a new show for the network.
What is it?
You know how I liked the 1990s comic book series, The New Warriors?
Yes.
And you know how at the Long Boss Crusade we're trying to get the YouTube channel going?
Yes, also correct.
Well, thanks. So, how about you and me do a live stream show about The New Warriors? You've never read the books before, and I have them, and so that's a great setup. We could give it a catchy name, like Come Out to Play. Don't you think that's the greatest idea?
Sure, Delvin, that's a great idea. Just one question.
Yeah?
Why do you have me dangling off this ledge, holding me by only one arm?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll get it soon, I hope. Come Out to Play, a New Warriors podcast, comes to you live on YouTube every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Long Box Crusade channel. If you can't watch it there, we replay them on the Long Box Crusade Network podcast feed, available anywhere podcasts can be found. We invite you to come along for the ride, or in other words, New Warriors, come out to play, yay!
Podcast.
A comic book podcast that actually talks about comics.
Yep, each week we open the shop up and read and discuss a comic.
Sometimes we pair that up with comic book movies or TV shows.
Or not. Lots of times it's just comic books and sound effects.
Oh yes, definitely lots of sound effects.
So tune in on all the major podcasting platforms for The Last Comic Shop Podcast. Or check out our library of evergreen shows at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, folks, that's it. Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next time here inside the pull bag.
Go, Web, go!
We have got, next episode will be Scow. Wow. Reset.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pull Bag, the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepullbag. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter, @thepullbag and @geekcastradio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.